Well, hello there, and welcome back to the show. It's an actual episode this week with a real guest and everything. It's not just me. I know that you all don't mind when it's just me. I see that you're still listening to the show, whether I have a guest or not, but I'm excited that I have a guest this week. It's my big sister, and that's fun and exciting for me. I felt like this was a good week for this episode. I feel like I've been putting this episode off for a long time, and I don't know why. I asked my sister maybe a year or even two ago if she would be willing to share her story on the podcast, and she said enthusiastically, immediately, without hesitation, yes, of course. And that I think that surprised me. I didn't know if she was going to, you know, respond like, I need to think about it. There's a lot there that I don't know if I'm comfortable talking about, but she was just immediately like, yeah, no problem. That sounds great. And then I've been the one dragging my heels and not doing it. And I don't know, maybe I was afraid that I wouldn't be up to the task of talking about this. And it actually went very smooth. It was not a big deal. We got through it and we're both fine. And it was a story that really we both told many, many times over the years. And so it didn't, I don't know what it was, why I was putting it off, but maybe I was just waiting for a time when it felt topically correct. And right now it does feel topically correct for me, just in where I personally am in life. January, the holidays into January, it's always sort of a tough time mental health-wise for me. And this year in particular, it feels like it's hitting particularly hard. I had a really, really great year professionally in 2022. Best year of my life so far. Exceeded all expectations. And I set, because 2022 went so well for me professionally, I set the bar very high for myself in 2023. My New Year's resolutions were very specific. I had very specific goals professionally that I wanted to accomplish in 2023. And I was coming off of the high of this very successful year, and I wanted to ride that momentum, continue growing on my different social media platforms, continue growing financially, professionally, continue growing artistically and creatively. In many ways, I did do that. But also, in many ways, the year of 2023 sort of ended with a crash and burn. It just felt like all, you know, I mean, I did experience growth on all of my different social media platforms throughout the year, but it felt like in the last quarter of the year, it all just sort of hit a wall and skidded to a halt and did not recover. And I'm used to my social media sort of going through peaks and valleys, but this felt like a particularly long dry spell and valley where I haven't had any work with any brands. I haven't had any paid gigs, anything like that. And I've been just sort of coasting on fumes. And I sort of came into the finish line of at the end of the year feeling really distraught and down and feeling like I really fell short of a lot of my goals for the year, and the year was a big disappointment. And so I was heading into 2024 sort of not knowing what it was I should be aiming for or planning to do. It felt like a rebuilding year. It felt like I was starting over from square one again, and my typical seasonal depression and sadness and my seasonal blues felt amplified, and you know, it was like, well, geez, I felt like I was building towards something. I felt like I was moving up, and now I feel like I've backslid considerably to a place where it almost feels like all the progress I made doesn't even matter. And none of that's true. That's not true. That's just the way that my depression makes it seem. But all of this is just to say that I've been particularly gloomy as of late. I'm feeling myself this week pulling out of it. I'm feeling myself getting back into a more consistent work groove and getting motivated again to attack the year and do what I can and control what I can control. But I gotta say that I was a little bit, it was like a 4 week stretch there where I was a little bit concerned. I was talking to my therapist and I was talking about, you know, like how I got strep throat and it allowed me to have an excuse to not work for like 5 days, 5-6 days. I was really, really sick the first few days. The first 2 or 3 days, I had a brutal fever. I had a fever that went as high as 103 and it would go down as low as 94. So the extremes were really up and down, and I was sweating through my clothes, and then I was so cold and I couldn't stop shaking no matter how many layers I put on. And that was like the first 2 or 3 days of this particularly bad case of strep throat. But it gave me the excuse of like, well, I don't have to work right now, and I can just sort of be depressed on the couch watching TV all day. And then the strep throat got better, and then I had to get back to work, but I was still just very sad. And I was talking to my therapist about that, and she was like, well, it's okay. It's okay to also take sick days when your mental health is not doing well. She's like, you know, just don't do it for too many days in a row. It's okay if you need to do that for 2 or 3 days, but don't do it, you know, much longer than that. And I was like, what if I've been doing it for upwards of 3 weeks? She was like, yeah, it's okay for 2 or 3 days. I was like, is 21 days okay? Is 21 straight mental health days okay? So, you know, it was a little bit of a low swing there. And, I thought, what better time to have an episode that focuses on mental illness and mental health? And I thought I would, you know, tell this story. When I was 9 years old, something about me, something about your boy Austin. When I was 9 years old, my big sister Allison was hospitalized. She was having a dissociative manic episode as a result of bipolar disorder, and this was sort of the first time in my life that I was introduced to the extremes of mental health issues and the reality of how your brain can turn on you when it is unhealthy. And it can turn on you to such a degree that it can completely distort reality and make you completely disconnected with objective reality. And in some ways, it's like this is not too dissimilar from what my depression does, in the ways that it twists reality and twists the narrative and twists the way that I see myself and twists the way that I see my accomplishments. It can make me feel like a complete failure and a loser, and that everything I've ever done means nothing, and that I've completely backslid back to absolute zero because I had a few bad months, or, you know, just and that's just not true. But it is what I'm trying to say here is, you know, this experience that I had as a child witnessing my sister go through this, it was sort of my first awakening or awareness to this being a thing, that your brain can work against you, that your thoughts are not always your friends, and that you have to be diligent about your feelings and your thoughts and monitoring them and being aware of them, because just because it's a part of you doesn't mean that it's necessarily good for you. And I definitely know in my life that there are aspects of me as a person, aspects of my brain and aspects of what constitutes my conscious experience as a human being that are not good for me. There are parts of my personality that are massively self-destructive. There are parts of my personality that are incredibly delusional. There are parts of my personality that are just simply not healthy for me and the people around me. And I really feel like this story was my introduction to that. And I also just feel like my sister's story is an incredible success story with severe mental illness, and I'm very inspired by her. I hope that you'll enjoy the story. I won't get too much further into it because it's coming up on the show, so let's just go there and do that now. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my big sister, Allison Donaldson, about bipolar disorder. There it is. We're live. Hello, everybody. We're back with a guest this time. It's just been me for the last like 5 weeks. It's been just me talking, and I finally have a guest. Allison Donaldson, my big sister, is here. Hello. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're the so now it's I've had mom and dad, I've had Adam and Lisa on the show. So now it's you and Anthony. And I guess if I wanted to do in-laws as well, I would have to have Nicole and Fred on as well. And then that would be all of the siblings. That'd be all, then, but then there's 15 nieces and nephews that have not. So, you know, you're not like the last on the list. We're working our way through it.
Well, I enjoy being a listener above all. So this is a little bit nerve-wracking for me, but,
but you're like on your favorite show.
it's like, whoa, I'm here. But yeah, I just fan above all. Yeah, but I'm the oldest. Austin is 9 years younger than I am. So yeah, I'm just extremely proud. And yeah, I remember when he was like not getting good grades in junior high and calling way out from Virginia and just getting really upset. So yeah.
Were you upset at me or was I upset about
school? Yes. No, I was bugged. I was like, what stop screwing around. Clean up your grades. You know? A little bit of a mother figure there, even though I wasn't supposed to be, but
yeah, no, you always have been. And I think that's the case when someone's, you know, 9 years older. My mouth today is killing me. I it's been the unending dental saga.
Serious.
It's never ending. So this tooth that I've got up here has a root canal on it, and it now has a fracture in it because the tooth below it is hitting it too high in my bite.
Oh my gosh.
And the fracture let in all this bacteria. And now I have an abscess above it. So there's a big bubble in my gum. And I went to the dentist today and they cut the bubble open and drained it. And now it really hurts because they had to cut this infected
bubble. You should go around the country advocating for dental health for young people.
I just think
your 6 month cleaning.
I just think I have really susceptible teeth because I have friends who have way worse dental hygiene than me who just never get cavities or have problems with their teeth. I just know people who have they've never had a cavity, and I've just always had problems with my teeth. And the last like 5 years, it feels like nonstop. It feels like every time I get one thing fixed, another thing happens. Like that, I just found out today too, when I was in there, he took an x-ray and he was like, oh, also this crown that you have on a tooth on the bottom is not sitting flush with the gum. And he's like, so you have to get that redone. He's like, they have to take that off and redo that. And I just was like, you gotta be kidding me. I was like, it's just,
can you keep the bad news to a minimum?
Like, yeah.
Tell someone else. I don't want to know.
Yeah. It's
horrible.
I'm over it. I'm really, really over it. But now I have to have another root canal done on this tooth if I want to save it. So anyway, whatever. I will advocate for having stronger bones in your genetics, teeth bones.
There you go.
And you know, and if you don't, then just good luck. And I hope that you have a tolerance for the dentist, because I don't even like being there.
Of course not.
But, yeah. Anywho, the episode.
And you
is
waited
called
to tell me this till we were here, so you'd get a real strong reaction, right?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that this was part of the show. I felt like this was a good way to relax you and just we'll, you know, and calm you down, and then we can get into what we're talking about. Also, I've been watching a lot of our nephews' show. Do you watch their show at all? On YouTube,
I have watched like the first three, and yeah, for some reason, well, I don't think I've subscribed because it's not coming up naturally, so I need to fix that.
You got to subscribe, but
I know,
I think I get what you, because you always listen to my podcast, and I'm always so impressed because you and I don't think we have ideological differences on certain things. We have different religious persuasions and beliefs and things like that. And I'm very vocal about my beliefs and my opinions on my show. And you're always like, I listen to every episode and I'm always surprised by that. I'm like, I can't believe, but you're just like, I just like listening in. I just like hearing you talk. And that's sort of how I feel about Tyler and Logan is I'm like, I just like listening to them be brothers and hang out.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, I get it. Oh, I get it.
You paved the way. Hello. They want to be just like you. Yep.
Yeah. Everyone should go subscribe to the Brothers Offscreen podcast with Logan and Tyler Archer. They're doing a good job over there reviewing movies. And that's my little plug for them. But yeah, the title of the show this week is Bipolar Disorder, which I had to like also look up. I was like, what is like the DSM currently calling it, because they're always changing the names and everything. And I believe when you were diagnosed in the 90s, it was still being called manic depression or bipolar manic depression. But now it seems like the name across the board is bipolar disorder. Do you still associate with the other monikers, or do you have one that you prefer?
I don't really prefer either way, but I do agree with you. It seems like bipolar is what you would see written or what you would read about. That seems the most common term right mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, this I feel like this is a condition that around the time that you were diagnosed, it seemed like there was it's almost like ADHD right now, how ADHD and autism are getting this like groundswell of people self-diagnosing through the internet and then finding you know, like clinics to go and be diagnosed at. And it's just this ever like it's sort of almost like a like more and more people are going, oh, those symptoms seem to describe my experience,
resonate.
Yeah, and it feels like at the time that you were diagnosed, it feels like more and more people were getting diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And this was almost like an up-and-coming new diagnosis. It's one of these things where you can see symptoms of bipolar disorder in people throughout history, but they didn't necessarily have the diagnosis or a name, or maybe they had a different name for it. They used to call it, they would call people just, oh, you've got, you know, like a case of madness, or, you know, like they would send people to a madhouse or an institution or something like that. We seem to have a better understanding of it now. We seem to have better medication for it. Let's start with, oh, your daughter's here. She's in the comments now. She says, hi, that's my awesome. Favorite people. I was thinking we would just start, you know, Julie Andrews style at the very beginning, a very good place to start. And just from your perspective, I have sort of my perspective of when this was beginning and when I first started to notice it. But from your perspective, living the experience, what's the story for you? Are you noticing it on some level, or does it have to be pointed out to you by other people? Or like, what's, you know, where does this begin for you?
Well, it certainly didn't start for me with bipolar. I started when I was like 11 or 12 with just feeling sad, just feeling blue and out of sorts. And I didn't know how to describe it. I didn't know how to explain it, but I just felt like I was different than other of my friends, different than other people. I didn't feel like going outside. I didn't feel like being with other kids my age. And I tried to explain it to my parents, but, and it wasn't like they weren't open to hearing about it, but it was just kind of so vague, because I couldn't really, I was young too. I was like 11 or 12, you know? And so pretty soon my mom took me to a nurse practitioner. My dad's best friend was an obstetrician, and a lady that he worked in his practice, she got me on Zoloft. And so
this is like at 12, you were on Zoloft?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
Yep. So I think it helped a little bit, and just helped kind of help me not like dive down too far, but it still kind of would surface like probably like twice a year. I would get these kind of feelings of feeling real down, for around a month or so. And then, you know, I just kind of pull out of it. And yeah, I think that happened.
Are you at this age, because you're being medicated? So this is all new information to me too. I didn't know that by like 12, you were beginning medication for it, mm-hmm. but is it severe enough that you're already having like suicidal ideation or anything like that at 12? Okay.
No, not that bad, but definitely feeling like withdrawing myself from even like, you know, a loud family party or not wanting to go be with friends, you know, just, but I couldn't say to anyone, oh, I feel depressed. I had no idea what that word even meant. You know, I just felt different, you know? Mm-hmm. So I can't even say how long that went on, but fast forward to my high school years, that still kept continuing on, you know, but I was just talking to mom about this a couple days ago. And I said, what was my medicine like in high school? And she said that I specifically said to mom and dad, I don't want to be on this Zoloft anymore. So I told them, I don't remember this. I want to stop taking it. And I mean,
do you know how around like 15?
No, this was my senior year of high school.
Okay.
I said to them, I want to stop.
But that means you were taking it for 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think wow. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I wish my memory was better. I mean, I think the bipolar has something to do with it, but I also think I just don't remember things very clearly. But this is important to me because I didn't realize that I just stopped at cold turkey. That's really what caused my mania.
Do you think
that's really what caused? Absolutely. And yeah. She even told me, she goes, yeah, that's totally what caused it. And I was like, how did I not know this? So, yeah, she just said, well, if you really don't want to take it, I guess you don't have to take it. You know, well, it's very important with certain medications that you taper off of it. And maybe they had me taper off of it. I don't know. But I guess having taken it that long, that was a problem, you know, coming off of it. And there were just a number of things that happened. I wasn't sleeping very well, and I wasn't eating very well, and just a whole number of things. I started dating a guy that was 23, and I wasn't even quite 18 yet.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting how so much of this stuff to me seemed not weird. I was young enough that I was like, I remember there being a vibe around you dating an older man that like people were like, I don't know if that's it. I don't know if it's a healthy thing, but I was like, you both looked to me like the same age. And to me as a, you know, it just was not a thing that I met today. If a 17 year old niece of mine was dating a 23 year old guy, I'd be concerned. I'd be like, hey, come on, what's going on here? What's the situation? Yeah. You know? But it's interesting that from my perspective, it's also just interesting to hear that this was going on from like 12, because I think that outwardly you present as a very, you're just such a happy presenting person. You have such a warm energy wherever you go in a social situation. So I think that you don't lead with depression. You don't come into a social setting with family members or with friends leading with, I'm so sad and despondent right now. You're always sort of bringing a light into the room with you. And I think that this is a common thing that people see with people who are struggling with depression, is that they can put out a really nice presentation of wellness while there's something going on under the surface that is difficult.
Well, I certainly didn't want to appear down, and people are one of my favorite thing in the world. I love being with people, and I've also learned that with bipolar, when you are having a manic episode, you become 100% of who you already are. So if you're kind of an angry, frustrated type, you might personify that. And I like to think that I am still pretty pleasant to be around, even when I'm not absolutely aware of what's going on around me, mm-hmm. you know? So anyway,
well, you've got the soul. I think you've got the soul of an artist too. You've got the, you want to bring beauty into the world. And so a manic episode for you takes you to the places of like almost like saving the world with music and beauty and art, you know, it almost, at least that was what it looked like from the outside.
Well, oh, if I, well,
do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yeah. I do. Mm-hmm. I do. If only I was the kind of artist that you are, maybe that would have come across better. But like, for example, I got into the school talent show that year, my senior year, and I love the Indigo Girls. And a friend of mine, we sang the song Kid Fears, and a friend of ours played the drums. Somebody else played the guitar, I think. But when I got home that day, Adam, our brother, he's just 2 years younger than me. He said, "What were you doing up there?" It's like, "You looked so weird." And I remember I was kind of offended and I was kind of sad.
Yeah.
But I wasn't quite looking myself. Yeah. And I mean, I couldn't see myself up there, but I think I just, yeah. I don't know how to put it into words.
Is there any part of you that's aware of, like, were you doing something that was odd? Or in your mind, were you just on stage singing a song?
I think I was on stage singing very passionately. I think mm-hmm. that's how I felt. But I have never had any alcohol in my life. But if I could imagine what it would be like the next day after, you know, drinking a lot and having a hangover and not quite remembering what it's like the night before.
Sure.
I think that's what a mania is kind of like, because people tell you kind of what you were like and you kind of remember a little bit, but yeah, it's just all kind of hazy.
And yeah. Even, I can relate to that. Okay. That's a good example. I'm like, I know what you're talking about there, where it's like, I felt like I was just talking to someone at a party enthusiastically. Right. And then the next day someone's like, "You just yelled a story about a movie at that person for an hour and a half. And you repeated yourself." Like, they kept saying, "I got it." And you kept repeating yourself.
But do you? Do yeah. you got it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm afraid there was quite a bit of that. And even some things that were not true at all. Like, apparently I told someone I was pregnant. Not pregnant at all.
Now, so this is the stuff. So like I've heard stories, I think from Adam and from some other people, about like him first noticing it with this performance. I've heard this story before, and his recollection of it is that it was an enthusiastic enough performance that it felt like there was something. I think that from his perspective, he was genuinely concerned, and he wasn't trying to say to you, "What, you're a weirdo," but I think that he was just going like, that looked a little odd, what the amount of emotion that you were pouring into just singing this song for the talent show.
Not genuinely your normal energy.
Yeah, it seemed. Yeah. And then I think that he brought that to mom and dad too. He's told me that he was like, "No, trust me, it's a little bit." But I, at what point, I'm wondering, does it start crossing into this realm of, now I'm telling people things that aren't true? And are you aware that you're saying things that you know aren't true? Or is it just the person's coming to you later and saying, "You told me you were pregnant," and you don't have any recollection of saying that?
No, I don't even know who it was. I just, it's just kind of, yeah, it's kind of a memory of, I don't, it's not even a memory. It's just that I was told that I told someone I was pregnant, and No, it's not physically possible.
Okay. Okay, so in that same vein, then my question, and we talked about whether or not we were going to talk about this.
Yeah.
But since we're in this area, my sort of my part of this story at 9 years old, and this is sort of a very formative experience for me because it taught me about the brain and like sort of what can happen to a person's perception of reality at a very young age. It was like, this is a thing that's possible. I didn't understand it initially. Mom and Dad tried to explain it to me later, and I understood it better as I grew up through my life. But there was a day in my life that I remember as a young boy that I was walking by your bedroom and you leaned outside of your bedroom door and he said, "Will you come in here and talk to me? I have to tell you something." And I said, "Yeah, sure." And I went in and you sat me down and you were very emotional and you told me that you were my mother and that Mom and Dad had lied to me and that they were pretending they were my parents, but you had actually given birth to me and you were my mother. And I didn't fully understand what was happening. So again, I wonder about this. Do you have a recollection of this event, or is this another one of those things that you only know because it's been recounted to you by me and by Mom and Dad? Or
it's kind of like, it's like a memory from a dream. It's kind of like flashes. I can kind of remember, but it's mostly that people are telling me that it happened, mostly. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what happened next about the river?
I do. So I remember
that part.
And you know, if you remember anything differently, feel free to step in too, if there's anything that pops out, any imagery. But I know that it felt like I was I became sort of like a focal point in whatever was going on in this dissociative episode or something. That Mom and Dad felt like you did better when I was around. And so they kept me home from school for a few days to just be with you. Yeah. Cause you were home. Yeah. And so they just said, will you just hang out with your sister and just sort of be with her? And I remember sitting in the family room with you and you would play me songs by the Indigo Girls and you would tell me, you would say, "Do you not hear what's going on under the music?" And I would say, "What's going on under the music?" And you'd say, "There's a message in there that says that we need to go to the President of the United States and tell him that he needs to work with President Hinckley to give the country back to the Native Americans." And so President Hinckley was Gordon B. Hinckley, who was the president of the Mormon Church at the time. And you would play this song over and over again and go, "Can you not hear that?" And I was just going like, I don't know what, you know. And and then there was a day where I was home from school with you and we had a river in our backyard that was the runoff of the Little Cottonwood Canyon. And it was it was probably the beginning of winter or maybe it was beginning of spring, but it was a day where it was probably like 45 degrees outside or 50 degrees outside. And the river was flowing where it was about waist deep. And Mom and Dad went out in the backyard and found you wading through the river in your pajamas waist deep. And they were trying to get you back. And you said, "Tell Austin to come out here because I want to take him to Terabithia," which is across the river, which, you know, the bridge to Terabithia, that book. And so they got me and they said, "But you need to come get him because he can't walk out there to you. You need to come get him." So you walked back across the river. And once you walked out, I believe that was the beginning of your hospitalization was that day. But again, is any of this, when I tell this story, do you go, I remember the feeling of the water. I remember the thought of, "Oh, I got to go out there." Or is this all just like people have been telling you these stories for the last 20 years and you just sort of go, "Sure, why not?"
No, it's not that, but nothing is concrete, nothing at all. But gosh, I had no idea they kept you home from school. I feel terrible. Oh,
you have nothing to, this is, I mean, and in this conversation, of course, I'm not, this isn't.
See, but that's something I didn't know. The whole Gordon B. Hinckley and President of the United States, that's so funny. But that is how my brain was working then. I think there was also somebody that came to deliver something to the house. That person was of Native American descent. And I had that person come inside and I was also like played music for them and talked to them about saving their people or something. That person was like
you weren't necessarily wrong. Like your heart was in the right place.
Of course. Yeah. You know. But the whole thing, like heart being in the right place. It's like, just let that person go. Let that poor person go. Anyway.
What do you think that, I mean, because like, I think that, like you said, in many ways, you have been a mother figure to me in my life. And do you think that that stems from there somewhere, where you talked about how when a person's in a manic episode, it makes them 100% who it puts them 100% into the kind of person that they are. And maybe you're stepping into these roles that you already felt, you know, that like there's, because at the time, I mean, you were a poet, you wrote poetry and painted. And I think you've always had sort of an artist's soul. And so listening to your favorite band and hearing deeper messages in that music, it all feels very tied to sort of who you are anyway, but then it's just sort of amplified to a level where it becomes detached from objective reality.
I mean, another thing was another part of my personality, I'm very religious, and when my mom was getting me ready to go, she was doing my hair or something, and I have no idea why, but I thought that I was some religious savior of some kind. I don't know what. And then once I got up there, I thought that all the medical residents that would come and talk to me, and there were a lot of them, they would come and, you know, they wanted to know all about my case, you know, and I remember sitting in this big long room. I thought they were the disciples of Christ, and I gave them all names. Yeah.
Wow.
No, well, I know that that's not anyone else's memory, but mine too. I do.
And remember. So you do remember that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when that's happening, is there any part of you that's going, that doesn't sound right? Or are you just,
oh, not at the time. I was so committed to that.
Yeah.
Not at the time. But they were giving me really powerful medication. They were trying to bring me down. I had really heavy sleeping meds, because before I went to the hospital, they took me to Primary Children's Hospital. Because I had just barely turned 18, they took me to the Children's Hospital, not University of Utah, not to like the adult. Anyway, but yeah, I hadn't been sleeping really at all. I don't know if you knew, the one night they had me go stay with Kono and Pop because mom and dad weren't getting any sleep either.
Sure. So. And did you stay up all night at Kono and Pop's?
Probably. Yeah. But that's where all the hallucinations were coming from. Your body has to have sleep. Just can't function without it.
No. Absolutely. That's definitely not helping. You know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. definitely, you have all these contributing factors that are piling on top of each other. Have you ever thought, and, you know, I'm not going to pose this question as an indictment of your religious beliefs in any way whatsoever, but I, you know, it's like, this is actually a thing that happens a lot, is deep religious devotion mixed with mental illness that leans toward, you know, dissociative episodes or delusional thinking can be a bad mixture. Like it happened with the Lafferty brothers from Under the Banner of Heaven. I don't know if you know that book, that John Krakauer book, but it's that same thing of like, when you're part of an organization that tells you that God is speaking to people in modern times and that he's choosing elite people to speak to and to deliver messages to, and then you have a mental health condition that has you hearing messages in music or things like that, or like, is there anything about that combination that you've ever looked at and gone like, oh geez, that, or do you think that at all, that like maybe that wouldn't, I don't know, that could exacerbate the condition, or do you find that your religion has been very helpful in your mental health journey? Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Kind of,
but like, is there a correlation? Do you find that there could be a correlation between the magical thinking that exists in religion, where there, and what I mean by magical thinking is just the idea that there's more than meets the eye to reality. There's more going on here. There are planes of existence that we're not privy to. There are spirits that are speaking to and through people. There's visitation from people who used to be here, things like that. And mixing that with a mental health disorder that can, you know, does that make, so that's what I'm asking is, have you ever considered a possible like correlation there? Or
I don't know, religion hasn't ever, I mean yes, obviously with what I just said, it was wrapped up into my hallucinations and delusions. But maybe I could continue my story a little bit.
Sure.
I've only ever had two major manic episodes in my life. I'm going to be 40. I'm going to be 45. How old are you? 30. You're going to be 36. I'm going to be 45. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I had a second there. But both of my manic episodes came fairly close together. And I think they were both due to I think the first one was due to kind of maybe just a coming of age and also, you know, going off of that Zoloft. But then I got married really quickly in life. I got married when I was just barely 21. And then, no. Anyway, 20. Yeah. And then I had my first baby when I was 21. So yeah. Very quick, all those things. And then we decided to move out to Virginia right after my first daughter, Bryn, was born. So I handled that first big step of getting married fine. My baby just was born and, you know, I didn't have any postpartum depression. That was all great. But moving all the way across the country to Virginia, that was a huge life step. And I did not handle that well at all. I had a huge manic episode. And my mom came out and stayed with us for a few weeks. And then my ex-husband's mother came out and stayed with us. So to me, that was just a huge physical change. And my body just couldn't handle it.
So. When you were 18, you went cold off the Zoloft. Was there any medication shift at that time? Was there any kind of like chemical shift that you, like, did you have to go off meds for the pregnancy or anything like that?
Oh, well, I mean, there's no way I could remember everything they did in the hospital. I know I went on something called Depakote, which is a really heavy medication. But I do know that when I got pregnant with Bryn, I was only taking one thing, which was Neurontin. And that's just such a mild thing compared to, man, I'm taking like six things now. So, I don't know if my body didn't have enough protection, if I wasn't taking enough meds. I don't know what the problem was.
But let's talk a little bit about that, though. You talked about like the six things that you're taking now. Like, what all are you on now? I mean, what's the regimen now? And has it been the same since? I guess going back a little bit, like it felt at the time when you were in high school and you were hospitalized, it felt like kind of a dire situation. And I think that the way that mom and dad tell it is, it's almost like some of the doctors were going, we don't know if she'll be able to live a normal life. Like, we don't know if we can pull this person back. You know, it felt to me, I have a lot of friends who are diagnosed bipolar disorder, and I haven't witnessed many people hit the extremes, hit the highs of a manic. And I know that you've said you've only had two, but that period in high school, I think really, really scared the family and even it seemed like that the doctors who were looking at your case were going, oh geez, we don't really know what's going on here, if we can pull this back. And I think that there were they had to try different combinations of different things. Was there a thing that you can remember like clicked in or helped or a doctor that you worked with or a therapist or something where it clicked in and they went, now we got it. Now this feels manageable and feels like it's back on track.
Do you mean right after high school, or do you just mean ever? Or?
Yeah, like I mean, like the, when the yeah in high school that period, you know, what was the treatment like? What did they find that you feel like helped, and what does it look like today? Your mental health sort of regimen, your treatment for it.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. So we found a wonderful doctor when I was getting admitted to Primary Children's. The doctor that was on call ended up being my doctor. He was wonderful. His name was Dr. Currier, and he took such good care of us, and we ended up working with him the whole time I was in college, and which wasn't long. It's just 2 years, and then I got married. But he ended up coming to our wedding, and I remember he came in. He was wearing like a Hawaiian shirt or something and a funny hat, and he came over and he gave my parents a hug, and he started crying, and he said, I didn't expect this to ever happen. And I think they get a lot of disappointments and a lot of cases where things don't work. My first marriage didn't work, but I did get three beautiful girls. And I am still healthy to this day. So that is, to me, my life is a success.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Yeah. So that was amazing to come out of that, come out of the hospital, you know, after 2 years, and be able to get married and move on and move to Virginia. That was unbelievable. And you know, my ex-husband helped me find a doctor when we got to Virginia, because that was, how do you find a psychiatrist when you move to across the country? That's a really difficult thing. And he did a great job. And yeah, both of our parents came out and helped us stay out there for a while, because I was not myself, and I wasn't able to take care of our 6-month-old baby. But you know, our family just came together and helped us until I was kind of okay again, until I was stable. So, and then we found another doctor, and she got me on some medication so that I was ready to have our next baby, Kira. And she just called it the special cocktail, so that there were just a number of medications together that she just was able to get it just right. Now, lithium, a lot of people with bipolar take lithium. It is a metal. It's kind of a dangerous medication, but it's very effective. It's been around forever.
It's on the periodic table.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's an element. Mm-hmm. So I had to stop taking it for like 3 months while the baby's heart developed. And then I went right back on it. So I wasn't excited about having to stay with it, but she was a wonderful doctor, and she let me know that the mother's health is just as important as the baby's health, because if my health was jeopardized, then the baby wouldn't develop well either. So that was, you know, that was important for me to hear, but she just did a really good job explaining it. And anyway, and then we moved here. So anyway, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, do you feel comfortable saying everything that you take now, or do you want to just leave it at, there's like six different things?
Oh, no. No, I'm fine with it. So right now I take Lexapro, Lamictal, lithium, Neurontin, and probably leaving something out. Lexapro, Lamictal, lithium, Neurontin. I think that's the core. And I take a few things for my migraines. So I get chronic migraines too. So,
which sucks.
I didn't have any until Kira was born. So who knows? Whatever.
We've talked about there's those two manic episodes that were probably the most scary, where it got the highest or got the most to a place where it was a little bit scary and people needed to step in. The other part of bipolar, I mean, the reason why it's called bipolar disorder is because it's sort of these extremes of the ends. There's very, very high and up and buzzy, and then there's also extreme low. What's your experience with that? Obviously, starting out, you said from 12 to 18, there was Zoloft for just sort of this kind of nebulous depression that was plaguing you. Have you experienced deeper bouts of depression where you're really afraid of whether or not you're going to be able to like hang on to a desire to continue living and moving forward?
Well, I think you know that because sometimes I call you when yeah. I'm in position. Yes, unfortunately. And I feel the depression a whole lot more than I do the mania. I think with the medication, the highs and lows are just more like this and not giant hills, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're more manageable, but sometimes I do get stuck in ruts of depression and I have to, you know, I just have to be vocal. I think that's the thing that helps me the very most, is if I try to keep it all inside, then it just eats away, you know, no matter how long I've been doing this, it's not good to keep it inside. So just talking to my husband or my parents or anybody, you know, it's just helpful. Exercise, which I'm terrible at, but it is, I wish I would take it. Oh my gosh. I wish I would look at it as a pill. I wish I would, you know, look at it as something that a doctor's prescribed me, because
if only it were as easy as just taking a pill out and popping it. You know, everyone's on Ozempic right now and you're doing all that stuff, but I'm like, that's the, oh God, it's like, I want everything to be like that. I want everything to be just a thing that I got to take. It's like, you know, it's like, I think about it like taking care of my teeth. I'm like, I floss and brush my teeth twice a day, every single day. I, you know, rinse with antiseptic mouthwash. Like I'm really, really diligent about it, but it's also like a thing that takes me like 3 minutes to do. And exercise and stretching, which is good for my body and my mental health, if I'm doing it right, takes like an hour of my day and also is very strenuous. And it's just like, it's a lot more effort to put into it, you know? And usually you got to pay money to go to a gym or something like that, or take a class, you know, it's just a lot more like
effort.
Yes.
Yep, that's the word for me.
Yeah. I relate to that. Do you feel like maybe if there's a trade-off that you're like, I guess I'll live. This is where my mind goes, is it's almost like, I know how to manage depression. I know how to, I've been depressed enough in my life that like, I know that depressive states are just things that happen to me from time to time. And I know that they're temporary. And I know that I'm in one right now, and I'm like, I know that the one I'm in right now won't be the last. I know that this will happen again. And I know that from past experience that like, it's also not permanent, like that I'll pull out of it and I won't, you know, I know how to manage these better. Do you feel like if you have to have a trade-off, that it's like maybe the medication helps to rein in the mania so that the mania doesn't take you to a place that you might, you know, go into a fugue state and lose track of reality and wake up the next day and people go, you did this, this, and this. And you go, I don't even remember doing that. And that's a little less manageable. And the depression's like more of like a devil, you know, where you're like, I know how to manage that. Does that feel like something
that
resonates?
For sure. Yeah. There's, even when it gets really bad, you know that it's going to end. You know that there is a duration and you're going to pull out of it and it's, you know, it's going to be okay. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are times when I get a little bit manic, like if I've, you know, been cleaning the house a whole lot or organizing or, you know, something, and I can just feel myself like I end up talking a little too fast, or just, they're just little signs that I, you know, somebody that knows me well, like my husband, I'll ask him, I think I'm sounding a little manic, and he'll say, no, I don't think you are. Or yeah, maybe a little, you know. So it's nice to have people that know you well to kind of bounce the ideas off of, to kind of see where you're at, you know.
And I think that's one, you're always very diligent, I think, about like monitoring where you are and then being vocal about letting people know how you're feeling, which is good.
Mm-hmm. We were at a family party one time, and I was just having the best time, and I was running around, and I remember I had like these warm socks on, and I had a skirt, and it was like kind of a summer evening. And I remember Adam was like, are you manic? And I was like, no,
because you were just having fun.
Yes, exactly.
That's, oh god, that's also a rough spot about that, is that like then anytime that you're feeling good or feeling like you're riding high, you have to be skeptical of that, and that's a tough thing to deal with.
Can I just be me? Can I just be feeling happy and feeling great, you know?
Yeah, does feeling good, does feeling excited, does feeling happy need to mean that I might be about to have a, you know, dissociative, dangerous mental health episode, or can I just be happy and riding high for a few days?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel that way with panic disorder. I feel like when things are going well and when I'm getting a lot of breaks that are going my way, I'm booking a lot of work or things like that, and I'm feeling good, there's this fear of like the other foot's got to drop. So I can't just enjoy that period of success or that period of like, you know, positive growth or abundance. It has to be met with this sort of foreboding fear of like, well, but the, sure, that means that the universe is going to come and balance this out, and I'm afraid of what's going to come around the corner to balance it out. Am I going to get a cancer diagnosis around the corner, and that's going to balance out all the good stuff that's at, you know, like I don't know. Do you relate to that? That like maybe sometimes when you're feeling good, it's hard to enjoy it and just be in it, because feeling good has sometimes been associated with poor mental health for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Is that something? So it's, in mania, you've talked about, you know, not necessarily being fully aware of what your behavior is or what's happening, but like, are you conscious of it feeling good at all? Does it feel kind of nice sometimes to have that extra boost of energy, that extra zest for life?
Oh, absolutely. If I am just a tad manic and I'm, you know, have a lot of times it is just an excess of energy. So I've got all this energy. I'm running around cleaning and organizing and, you know, but I realize that it's not legitimately my energy. It's not like completely genuine energy, but I wish it could be. And I wish I could feel that way every day, but I know it's not normal. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like normally I don't have that much, that normal storage of energy. So, but like, I know that normally I just kind of have to pull myself out of bed, and I don't always feel that, you know,
yeah,
that much, you know. Anyway, so it's fine. But yes, I do. I do like it when I might feel a little artificial, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've been getting into like energy drinks lately, and I need to find something else. I need to find, maybe I just need to like start drinking coffee again or something. I don't know. But like, there's something about like, especially when I want to be working, when I want to like work a lot, and I'm feeling very just, I just always feel fatigued and depleted. And if I juice myself up with some like artificial energy, and as long as I'm moving, I feel good. Now, if I'm just sitting and I got too much energy, then I, you know, yeah, exactly. But as long as I'm moving around and I'm getting stuff done and I'm cleaning the house or I'm doing, you know, like, but I know that also it's like in the back of my mind, I'm like, this comes with a price. I feel like I'm doing damage to my, internal organs with whatever is in the stuff that I'm drinking.
Yeah.
I do really view your story as a success story. I think that it's amazing that you've had the life that you've had. You've raised, you know, you raised three really amazing daughters, really beautiful women, and you're also a stepmother to five kids. So you got 8 kids. You got this giant family. I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I was saying that I'm having my sister on my podcast to talk about bipolar disorder, and he was asking me about it, and he's like, do you feel like that like affected her personality at all to like be like the medication and stuff? And I was like, I don't know. And I mentioned the fact that I was like, she used to like write a lot of poetry when she was a teenager, and she used to like, you know, like draw and paint and things like that, and be in a lot of be in musicals and things like that. And then I told him that you have 8 kids, and he was like, well, it might have more to do with being a mom to 8 kids than like being the reason why she's not doing plays. And I was like, good point. I was like, that's true. She's busy. She's got a full plate. For sure. What's your day-to-day experience like with your mental health today? Is it always sort of at the forefront of your mind, or do you feel like for the most part you get to go through day-to-day existence? You don't have to, it doesn't rule everything that you do.
Oh, it definitely doesn't rule everything I do, for sure. I looked something up and I wanted to read it. Where is it? It's gone. Because I feel like you can make any kind of mental illness all about who you are. That bipolar shaped me, but it didn't break me. So
does that mean to you?
Well, that has happened to me because of being bipolar. I think it is definitely made me who I am, you know, and it's been a part of my life, but it didn't ruin me, didn't break who I am, you know? So it's not like I can't do any of the things I want to do because of bipolar. Because I have bipolar, I can't be a mother, and I can't be a friend, and I can't be a wife, and I can't pursue music or theater, or, you know, I want to be a teacher. I can't do any of those things because I'm bipolar. Well, I know that's not true, because I've already come all this way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did. I got divorced 6-7 years ago, and you know, it was very hard. It was sad, but I was lucky enough to get remarried to just my best friend, and we're so happy now. And yes, we have 8 kids together. It just, you know, life just keeps on getting better, you know, like, yeah, that could have been awful and I could be single now, but you know, Fred and I both made the goal to just get out there and meet new people. And so, you know,
here you are.
Now we have each other, you know? So life's never going to be easy, but you know, it's totally possible. And I think that is, that's overall what I would want people to know if they're facing a mental illness or they know someone that has one, is that it's completely possible. And also a plug for people dealing with something like this is that taking medication is super important. And it can be really tempting at times to stop and to not take it, especially if you feel like, hey, I'm really rolling along here. I'm feeling great. You know, why should I have to keep taking this? And, you know, I could feel that way because, man, some of the time I do feel great. And why should I keep taking this, you know, this cluster of 4 medications I've been taking for almost 20 years? Why should I keep taking this stuff? Because it keeps me doing as well as I am doing and have been for a really, really long time. So I think, you know, the medication is, it's like a seatbelt. It's there to keep us safe. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like that assessment. I like what you said, that it shaped me, but it doesn't break me. And also, I don't think, you know, fully defines everything about you or your experience. And I do think that that's, you know, I see this more and more, especially I was talking earlier about like ADHD and like the things that on the internet right now seem to be sort of popular niches for people to get into, is like talking about ADHD or the dual diagnosis of being on the autism spectrum with ADHD. And while I do think that it's very important for people to spread awareness of what those conditions are like and how to be able to deal with people who are dealing with those conditions in a more compassionate way, I also see a lot of people who, it does seem to be like the diagnosis becomes their entire personality and it sort of rules everything that they allow themselves to be capable of doing in the world. It's like, well, oh, I can't do that because of this or that diagnosis that I have. And I think that you've really kind of approached your life in a way of like, well, let me figure out how to do it with this thing. What's a way that I can do that in a healthy way? And I think that you've really done very well with that.
Well, a lot of people have helped me, and I haven't always been good at it, but I just keep trying. So
what, when you're struggling now these days, whenever, when you feel yourself in a difficult spot, where you're feeling like, it's been, you know, a few weeks in a row where you're just like, man, I'm in a rut, or I'm not, you know, what do you turn to? Are you in therapy right now? I mean, what do you go to right now that feels like it helps?
You know, I just looked last night, actually. There is a group therapy that I'm interested in trying. So just because it's be interesting to try something new. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But yeah, like my mom's always going to be my go-to, my best friend when it comes to girls. And I have to really probably give it to my parents when it comes to my health, because they always believed me and they always found me help, always. Mm. And they're still right there when it comes to checking on me all the time. And yeah, I mean, they just believed me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always grateful.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Is there anything else that you'd like to sort of suggest for anyone who might be struggling out there with this, or who might be, maybe there's someone right now who's wondering if like they might have bipolar disorder, or, you know, someone they know is struggling with it. Is there anything that you want to say to anyone who maybe for the first time is going, oh, what do I do about this? You know?
Well, it's, you can do it, you know, it's going to be okay. And, talk to other people about doctors that they have appreciated and liked. I know finding a doctor can be really scary. So yeah, get a referral from a friend. Just get some help, you know, talk to a counselor, talk to a psychiatrist, just stay close to people that you love, friends, family. Don't be on your own. Stay with people that you know and that you love.
And if you don't, you know, if you have a strained relationship with your family, you know, or community, I would still say, you know, trying to do things like this alone is always really, really hard. So yeah, finding some sort of community, whether it's in group therapy, like you said, or, whether if you're, struggling with something where you could maybe find like a 12-step room or something like that, where you can find community, that's definitely always a good option to lean on. Thanks. Julie's in the comments and she says, exercise daily works miracles. I do think that she's right about that. I think Absolutely. That our parents I think our parents have enjoyed such good health because they're always finding some way to be active on a daily basis. And whenever I'm staying at their house, when I'm like home, they're always like, every morning, they're like, we're going on a walk tomorrow morning. And I wake up in the morning and I go on a walk with them. And I'm like, I need to do this when I'm just at my place. I need to just get up and start my day with some exercise. Well, thanks for being here and doing this, and thanks for being vulnerable and allowing us to talk about some areas of your life that are maybe not the most fun to revisit, but you were very just vulnerable and open. And I am just very inspired by you and by the way that you have approached, you know, living a life with this condition, and how you continue to, and the way that you show up for your kids and for the people in your life with such grace and love. And you're just one of my favorite people in the world, and I love you so much.
Thanks, Austin. I love you. You're one of my favorite people in the whole world. Truly. This scared me. I'm so glad we did it.
We did it. That was easy, right? Like, that's an hour. Right. We blasted right through it, and no big deal. You no longer believe that you are my biological mother, and it's all good. We made it.
That's in the past.
So, yeah. Nope.
You are my brother.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. But yeah, but you are in many ways. You're like a, you know, a mother figure in my life. So
I do claim you.
Yeah. Yes. I see you being very, you have a very maternal instinct toward me, and it's I notice it. And there's lots of people who are saying here in the comments nice things. Your daughter's here, Bryn's here. She says, I love you, Mom.
Oh, and I love Kira, my girls.
And Kira says, you're like a mother figure in my life too. Because
Kira, she is my daughter.
Uh-huh. Yep. And yeah, all right, well, okay, great. That's it. So I love you so much, and thanks for doing this, and thanks everybody in the comments, and we'll see you on the next one. Okay,
all right,
bye-bye. Adios. I'm not sure if I adequately said this, but my sister is genuinely one of the best people in the world. I told her how much I love her and how inspired I am by her, and I've told all of you how inspiring I find her and how much I, you know, look up to her and appreciate her existence. And you know, I'm so proud of what she's done as a mother and you know, the children that she's raised. She's done such an amazing job there. But I'm not sure that I've said yet in this episode that I've really expressed to you what an incredible person that is that you just got to hear on the show. I hope that you felt it. She's just one of the most genuinely kind people I've ever known in my life. She's one of those people who it's like, it's really, really, really rare to see her lose her temper or have a cross word with someone that she's frustrated with. It's an incredibly rare instance for that to happen. She's always got a positive spin on things and is always bringing, you know, putting her best foot forward and bringing the most positive light into any situation that she's in. She's just one of the most genuinely sweet and kind and positive and inspiring people to be around that I've ever met. I love her. I love her so much. And yeah, I'm really glad that she did that. And I hope that you enjoyed that. I hope you got something out of that. If you are struggling, you know, reach out. You don't need to go through it alone. Being able to identify it and speak about it and say what's happening, I think is really, really powerful. Yeah. Okay. Cool. That's it for this one. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. It's a new year. It's a new chance to get on board and help be a producer of this show. If you've been an enjoyer of this show and a listener of this show and of the other content that I make online, as I said at the beginning of the program, it's been tight over here at yourpalaustin.theinternet.com, and it's been a tough stretch financially, and we could certainly use your help if you are available and able to give it
We would love to have you over there, patreon.com/AustinArcher. And thank you to all of the existing patrons. Your continued generosity just never ceases to amaze me. I love you so much and really, really appreciate that. Other ways that you can support, how about picking up a vinyl? The vinyls are available, the double vinyl for Beautiful Things, the deluxe edition, the album that I made is out now. You can buy that at my Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. You can find that at all the links in all of my bios on all of my social media platforms. Check that out for sure. And yeah, okay. That's everything, I believe. We'll see you next week. Until then, be well. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Be kind out there. And yeah, love you so much. Bye-bye.